Hey everyone, this is Steli Efti.
And this is Heaton Shah.
And in today's episode of The Startup Chat, we're going to talk about the top five fundraising mistakes.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
It might turn out to become top 10 fundraising mistakes, depending on how many we can uncover. But we'll talk about things that founders, the mistakes founders make when raising money that we've seen over and over and over again. And hopefully, if we can just make one of you people out there avoid some of these mistakes, then this was really, really valuable. So that's going to be the aim for the episode.
Awesome. Yeah. And, you know, context from my end is like I'm actually building a software product around solving this problem, around helping companies fundraise, mostly or associated around their pitch deck. I've been doing a bunch of research on this. So one of the inspirations of this podcast is the idea that like I've written a blog post on this last year, and it just keeps coming back over and over again. And I keep sending people this blog post too. Sorry for the noise. Someone's got a vacuum cleaner running. So I'm going to start with like just the five. And then, Steli, I think there's probably one or two of these worth digging into, or you probably have more. Everything that I discovered is research back. So these are all mistakes that we've heard from founders. My partner and I have heard probably from 500-600 founders now, maybe more, around some of these problems. So number one, pitch deck templates won't get you funding. This is probably the most important mistake. I don't know what you feel about it, Steli, but maybe it's actually worth pausing and discussing this one. The reason is, there is a ton of conflicting advice on this. One of the reasons is when you've never raised money before, the first thing you do is you look for a template on how to raise money and the pitch deck that you need to create or the business plan, you know, because a lot of people still use business plans, even though I say that pitch decks are the new business plan. And so you'll go find famous pitch decks out there, and many of them are from years ago, like Airbnb or, you know, even WeWork and a bunch of other ones. And what you'll see is that people are basically copy and pasting a lot of those kind of slides and templates. But what happens is when you do that, you end up basically looking like some other company or looking like a boilerplate templated business, which is really not what you want to do.
Yeah, this was actually really surprising to me to see, but it makes total sense. And it kind of highlights how, you know, how far away or how disconnected I am from raising money, because it's been a while. But we did a prior episode just on pitch deck, how to create a killer pitch deck. So you can go just a few episodes prior to this one and check that out. But when I saw that in the article, when I was reading your article and I saw the pitch deck one, I was like, really, is that one of the main mistakes people make? And then I realized that you're right. When you're doing this for the very first time and you're super early in the process, that's what founders do. They go online, they research, you know, the presentation, pitch deck, business plan to raise money or raise seed round. They see some of the top popular articles. Some are really, really outdated. They look at those, you know, those presentation templates. They get really excited. They launch PowerPoint or whatever, Keynote, and they start kind of slide by slide, just copying what they see plus adding their own name in there and trying to change a few numbers. And they're like, all right, shit, we got something now. We have a pitch deck. We could go out and raise money. And obviously, you know, you said it so eloquently in the last episode, the pitch deck is the new business plan, which I love and I'm in all favor of, to have something shorter than a whole fledged 60-page business plan when you don't even have something up and running. But obviously that is not going to get you the money. And the other thing, this is a mistake I see in sales as well so much, is when you read some of these articles and you copy word for word a template that you see, just ask yourself, how many other people are copying word for word the same template? Because this is a very popular article. So if I'm copying it, thousands of others do. And in the world of raising money and fundraising, it's actually a really bad thing, because there are not that many VCs and investors out there. And if you use a pitch deck template that has been around for 5 years and that you just found out of a Google search, it means these investors that you're sending these pitch decks to have seen this thousands of times. You need to stand out. You need to be authentic. You need to find your own voice. More importantly, your business needs to be compelling and not the deck. And I think that people confuse that in the early days and can kind of step into that trap.
Yeah, I'm glad you agree. It's definitely counterintuitive for many of us that have raised money before, because I used a template too, like meaning it felt like a template, but it worked back then because investors hadn't been seeing so many pitches. Now they're seeing a barrage of pitches. I mean, I talked to an investor in one industry and she told me she's seeing 10 pitches a day right now. And she said that most of them are pretty atrocious, which actually relates to my next point, which is the second point in the article, which I don't think we need to go over a lot because it's pretty obvious, but people don't realize this is don't send your pitch deck to investors before it's ready. And the reason for that is like the second they see it, they start forming an opinion about you and your business. And so you want to make sure you actually have advice and make sure that you actually spend the time to make it great. And that doesn't mean it's designed great or not, but it tells your story is the number one most important thing. And I know in our last episode that we talked about this with the fundraising pitch deck stuff, we went over that in depth.
But let me quickly ask you, I have a quick question on this because I think that some people might think here, wait a second, Heaton, you know, what about all this like, you know, done is better than perfect and move fast and break things. And how about the whole like having different versions and MVPs? Why isn't it a good idea to send an early version of a pitch deck to somebody to start the relationship and tell them, hey, this is version one. Do you have feedback? What would you like to see more? What don't you like? And kind of collaboratively, based on the feedback that I get from investors, improve my deck versus trying to get it right before I send it. I think that's something to play the devil's advocate. That's something that I could imagine some founders thinking.
I love that. Thank you for mentioning that. That is so good. Probably the best question I've ever heard about this stuff, the way you framed it. Honestly, in this case, number one, first impressions matter more than anything else. And the reason is investors are seeing so many pitches. Look, this lady sees 10 pitches a day. On top of helping her companies, on top of raising her money for her fund, and on top of just being an investor and doing whatever she has to do every day from networking to whatever, but she sees 10 pitches a day. So like, if you're sitting there like, hey, help me with my deck, help me make it better, but it's like really bad in the beginning, she's going to turn off and she's gonna be like, I don't have the time to do that. It's literally a time management thing. And I don't know how many of you, I'm going to blow up all my VC friends right now, but like, how many of you have ever tried to get a meeting with a VC, even friends, like my friends, and how many times they've canceled, right? And yeah. Like, if you're listening and you've ever had this, like, you know what I'm talking about. They have one of the busiest schedules, and I'm sure everyone by now knows how much I hate that word. But like, my friends that are investors have canceled on me, have flaked on meetings on me, and they're good friends of mine. And it's just simply because like their job is that hectic, right? Or they believe it is, which is a whole different story. So my point is like, don't waste your shots with an investor that could put money in by showing them something that's not ready for them to see. That being said, the number one thing, and this is what our software is actually designed to do, because this is what we heard, is that every founder gets feedback from people that are trusted, whether they're like an angel investor friend, a founder friend, or just some kind of advisor or a business person that can give them feedback on their deck and their story before they ever show it to like investors that are going to put in money. So everyone does that. And a core part of our product has to do with that process, not just sharing your pitch deck.
I love it. So that also actually plays right into the next point, which is the talking about the investor outreach strategy or lack thereof that many founders have, right?
Yeah. Yeah. This one's great. And this is like just the spray and pray. And I know that there are some investors who will tell you, we'll take a cold pitch. So we'll take someone who emails us and take it seriously. I will tell you, 99% of investors will not take you seriously if you cold email them, unfortunately. I wish this was different, and I wish that advice that some of them give you is true. But in 99% of the cases, unless the investor has explicitly said they want that and they're willing to do it, they don't want that. And the reason is they're just looking for signal. They're looking for a reason to trust you and believe in you even before they meet you. And the best way is when you get a warm introduction from somebody who knows them already.
Yeah, that's such a killer advice because, you know, it's fairly easy to get the email addresses of most of these investors. So, you know, you put together a rudimentary pitch deck and you have a list of email addresses. It's very compelling, you know, to just send it and be like, hey, we'd love to meet with you. But again, those people's inboxes are so overfilled with stuff. And the problem is that even if you've done a great, let's say your email is really, really stellar, the problem is that it lives in the greater context of the entire inbox. It's not one, not every email doesn't stand on its own ground of quality or lack thereof or relevancy or lack thereof. You are playing in the context of the overall state of their inbox. And if thousands of founders send shitty cold emails, you might just drown in that sea, although what you've sent might have been really, really compelling or good. So getting introductions, getting sometimes taking the indirect route to your goal is such a more successful strategy. I personally haven't heard anybody that sent a bunch of cold emails and then successfully raised money that way. I'm sure there's somebody out there, right? Just like there's somebody out there who won the lottery and got rich that way. But that's not advice that we would give to people that want to get wealthy. Just play the lottery doesn't seem like a great strategy for that.
Yeah, not at all, right? And like, you know, I mean, this is just a pattern that's continuous that like, you know, people think they should do these cold emails and stuff like that when like they just don't work. And they're a numbers game. And this is not like outbound sales. So number four is the fundraising advice you're getting isn't helping you. And this is very simple. Basically, what it is one of the most common problems with fundraising and making your pitch deck and even getting advice on the process is that you're going to get a lot of conflicting advice. Even like oftentimes what you say and what I say to one founder about fundraising might not be 100% aligned. In our case, we've talked enough together. We have shared context. It's probably 80, 90% aligned. But I've seen cases where like a founder will come to me and like, I'm doing this and I'm doing that and I'm doing that. I'm like, holy crap. Like that goes against every single thing I would ever tell you. But that being said, it's your pitch deck, your fundraising process. Do what you think is right. But don't do it because somebody said it. Do it because you actually think it's right. And so founders have a hard time thinking for themselves when they're fundraising, especially because they get in this mentality of, I've never done it before, but Heaton's done it a lot. Or I've never done it before, but that angel investor in my company said I should do it this way. Here's the truth. Very few people see the process of fundraising in current times from the backside of it, from the back end of it, meaning like helping founders go through it right now. And every like 3 to 6 months, the fundraising climate changes in many different ways. And so what happens is most people's data on how to do fundraising, how to make the pitch deck, what the process feels like is actually kind of stale, even if it's just 6 months old. And so, and you're talking to some founder that raised 6 months ago. And so that's one big reason. The other reason is like, you're just going to get a lot of different opinions because most founders have like maybe less than 5 experiences fundraising, even some of the best founders.
Yeah. You're just not raising money that often. That's just the gist of it. Like, even if you're a very successful founder, how many companies can you raise money for conceivably in a decade, right? I mean, unless you're flipping companies every year and raising money for them, but that there's almost no case that I can think of that would fit for that. So that's a really good point. The conflicting advice is really, it's really a tough one. And to me, this plays into one of the things that I think is one of the biggest mistakes that founders make when it comes to fundraising, which is that we're so incredibly insecure when it comes to fundraising. Like, we're these risk takers that didn't listen to their parents and didn't listen to their bosses, went out to start a company and change the world. But then when it comes to raising money, we're so needy and we're looking for, you know, confirmation, and we want our little baby to be loved by everybody, and we want these VCs to think we're beautiful and pretty and what we do is exciting. And when we get rejected, it breaks our heart. That level of insecurity is really counterproductive. It makes your own life so much more difficult, but it actually also makes fundraising much, much harder. So I think it's important to ask for advice and get advice. But as you said, too many times people just take what you told them. And because a lot of times the people you're getting advice from are somewhat successful, they give you that advice in a fairly convincing and confident way. So then people just submit to that advice without asking the important questions, which are, okay, Heaton or Stelly said I should do it this way. Do I understand why? What's the basic foundational principles behind taking this tactic or this strategy or not? And does this fit into the company culture that I'm building? Does it fit into my personality? If Stelly says go negotiate incredibly aggressively and take all these risks, is that something that's not just exciting or cool, but something that fits my personality or not? Or, you know, whatever it is, just filtering that advice and making sure that it works for you and you understand not just the words to say or the email to send, but why? What's the reason? What's the strategy, the larger strategy behind these tactics? I think that's oftentimes missing. And then founders zigzag from one strategy. They switch from one strategy to the other without even knowing that they do that all day, because they just take these, you know, pieces and bits of advice from conflicting people, and they never get to any kind of cohesive strategy themselves.
Yeah, it's like this age old, like, think for yourself, not like someone else.
Yeah.
So we have the last one, and then I think we're going to call it.
Yeah.
So let me look. Which one is that?
Making things
up.
Oh,
yeah. So, Steli, I'm going to start by asking you a question. Have you ever met a founder that's made something up in their pitch deck that wasn't true?
Yes.
How often?
Very often. Probably even more often than I know, because almost, like, I would say that 90% of the time, when I have the appetite to push and to dig, I'll find something that's not right. But I don't always do it. So I'm sure it's even more often the case than I'm aware of.
That's awesome. Yeah, I totally agree. And the number of times I can catch a founder in that is basically countless at this point. And the reason is they're just, you know, one of my favorites is like right now is like, we're using AI for our software.
Oh, God, yes.
And it's like, wait, hold on. And then I ask them because, you know, I happen to know a lot about a lot, but I really know a lot about AI. And it's like, wait, hold on. Hey, what is AI? And they're like, oh, yeah, you know, we're using some algorithms and this and that. I'm like, how much data do you have? And they're like, oh, we only have like 10 customers and they don't have very much data. I'm like, wait, what? What AI are you using? I want to know what AI that is. That's no AI that I ever heard of. You know, and then so they're just like, you know, and then if you dig in, it's like they added AI because somebody gave them advice, or they really felt like if they added AI because it's hyped right now, that some investor is going to get excited. In fact, what's going to happen is the investor has seen AI in decks so much now that, like, they're actually, it's a negative signal for them if you have AI in your deck. It's that simple.
Interesting.
So it's like if you put AI in there and then you can't really back it up, like you have experts on your team, or more importantly and better would be it's actually beneficial to your customer, or it's beneficial to your product or your business, then, like, don't put it in there. Even if you're using little algorithms or a little bit of machine learning, that's not AI. Right? Like, I've seen like simulations of brains with AI. That's barely AI, but it's AI, yeah, you know? Yeah. So it's like, yeah.
Most startups have A, they have zero I, right?
Nice.
This is like, there's no intelligence in any of what was described to me right now. It's just 20 scripts that are running. There's no intelligence here. Like, there's nothing that is learning and getting better over time. It's just hype, right? And as you said, I think that a lot of founders find, a lot of founders think that they are pressured by the market to be fashionable and to be on the hype train in order to appeal to investors. Oh shit, investors want AI, so everything needs to be AI. I had one of my salespeople yesterday, he went to a conference that shall remain unnamed recently, and he, at lunch yesterday, he's like, Steli, everybody at that conference was talking about account-based marketing and account-based sales. What? Yeah, exactly. Uh-oh. What is that?
Have we done an episode on that yet?
No, we haven't. We should.
Oh, shit. Okay. All right. Excuse my language.
So we'll leave that for later. But it's just like this, people don't know, like they start using these things because they seem popular. But when you, the slightest pushback, when you really ask them, what does this really mean? Can you explain this to me? They have no fucking idea what they're talking about. And that makes a really bad impression. And it will hurt you later. It will hurt you in the first impression. But with investors, you're setting yourself up for catastrophes if you start lying or bullshitting your way in the presentation.
All right. Well,
before we wrap it up, though, now we've told people all these mistakes, but let's give them something to help them make their pitch decks better and the fundraising better. I know that you've been doing a ton of research, a ton of work. First, manually for years, how many founders have you helped with their pitch deck? Have you helped with with raising money? I mean, it's countless people. You're not for nothing called the most generous founder in Silicon Valley. But you've now actually funneled all this experience and research and dedication into software. Where can people go to learn more about that and maybe start using some of the things that you've built to succeed with your fundraising?
Yeah. It's just starting to get out, and we're sending invites and stuff, and it's called Dugo. It's GetDugo, GetDogo, so GetDogo.com. You can either sign up for early access, or we might be open by then or by now. And check it out. It's a tool to help you with your pitch decks, help you get feedback on them, and help you actually share them with investors.
Awesome. All right. That's it from us for this episode.
Bye.